like the, it's very romantic to have unfulfilled potential.
Yeah,
and
you I can agree say, with that.
You know, and so I think that that's maybe the reason a lot of people say, "Well, I don't want to do this for a living because that will right. spoil the art."
Hello. I hope you're doing well. Welcome to the Horses and Ghosts Radio Hour with your host, Brian Bieber.
That's right. It's the Horses and Ghosts Radio Hour. That's exactly what this is. I'm your host, Brian Bieber. And, you know, when I was in the beginning stages of starting this podcast, I was very aware of how much media is out there to consume, that there's so much noise on the internet that it was very important that I come up with a name for the show that would be catchy and memorable and just roll right off the tongue. So I put a lot of effort into naming the show and my website, and I'm just so glad that effort wasn't wasted. Today I'm talking to people about how and why they make the things that they make, and a little later I'm also going to be talking to one of my friends about why I sometimes don't make the things that I make. It's the Horses and Ghosts Radio Hour. Welcome to it. You know, considering the logistics of traveling across the country with an 18-person striptease-slash-musical-comedy-variety show, which also includes a full live band and props and set pieces, it's really surprising that Super Happy Fun Time Burlesque is able to pull it off at all. So the fact that they do it so well, that their show manages to be so consistently funny and sexy and weird, is pretty amazing. Corey Ruffin, also known on stage as Mr. Happy Pants, sat down with me at the club before Super Happy Fun Time's show in Sioux Falls to talk about using the fundraising website Kickstarter to finance creative projects, and the difference between striptease and stripping, and why rehearsal time can be overrated.
How do you explain what you do, kind of the elevator, what's your elevator pitch to people who don't know what you do?
I'm still trying to figure it out in a way, I mean, because it's an 18-member show with a live band, comedians, dancers, magic, and the things I would call it, no one would ever know. I would say, oh, it's like Gilbert and Sullivan, and then a lot of people's jaws would be on the floor, like, oh, we don't really remember 19th century operetta, you know. So we call it burlesque for lack of a better term. Right now, I call it a body sexy musical comedy. That's the best way I can do it. And if they say, what's it like? I say, it's Rocky Horror mixed with Monty Python and The Price is Right. Yeah, if you've seen burlesque before, we're pretty different, I think, from a lot of the burlesque scene, which is awesome. I mean, the burlesque scene is fantastic, and all these amazing women are doing this amazing performance art. But we have a live band, and everyone else is doing it to CDs. Mm-hmm. Or if they have a live band, they're still in this mindset of doing it to retro jazz or something like that. And we write. Everything's original. The show.
And you do this monthly? Is that monthly shows?
Yeah. And we treat it like a musical, and especially the people who come tonight are going to see an hour and a half long musical that runs seamlessly. Tells a whole story. Everyone plays the same character. No one changes. Everyone has their own song, just like in a musical.
Okay.
You know
so
what I mean?
A little bit different than last time.
Yeah. That was like the first, you know, well, what your appetite. I mean, what we brought on the road last time was what we had been doing like 4 years ago.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And since then in Michigan, we've got like 6 or 7 original musicals under our belt.
Oh, phenomenal.
So now we're going to start taking those out and about. And this is big emphasis on live music, big emphasis on original music, and really telling a story. I mean, I grew up, as I said, on Gilbert and Sullivan and operetta and all that stuff. I love the melodrama. I love the phoniness of musical theater, and we're really going to play up that tonight.
No time to explain. There's no time. No time to explain. no time to explain. You must come right away with me. If you don't, I can't explain it. What would happen to you if you didn't come with me right now? Must come right away with me. If you don't, I can't explain it. What would happen to you if you didn't come with me right now? Must come.
It seems like there's a big misconception sort of about what burlesque means, mm-hmm. And the difference between striptease and mm-hmm. strippers on stage. So mm-hmm. maybe talk a little bit about that, like how you convert people or how you educate yeah. people about what yeah. you're doing.
You know, well, firstly, the most controversy is coming from people who've never seen it.
Right. That's always the case.
The most opinionated people are also
the most ignorant.
You know, in a strip club is a girl grinding her crotch in your face for money. That's all she wants from you. I mean, yeah. you're the mark. You come in, their eyes are on you, and they're working you for something. Here, you know, you're our mark to entertain. Hmm. You know, I mean, that's what we want to do. Just put on a good show. Make you forget about what's going outside these club doors, you know, just have a really great time. And I think that's, you know, you can get into feminist arguments or arguments about sexuality. Everyone has their line of what they're comfortable with and what right. they're not comfortable with. Obviously, we're very comfortable with a lot of stuff, you know, yeah. and people that aren't don't need to come. And if you were here last time, the people that you think aren't going to be comfortable with a lot of stuff actually are cool with it.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think audiences know to come in with a laid-back attitude and be ready to laugh at stupid stuff.
All the world's asleep, and the Hooters girl comes home, a bag of hot wings slick with grease, and her pantyhose has a run, and she says, I know I'm only 12 years old, but my breasts are fully formed, and this t-shirt has been worn before. I guess it's my breasts.
What's everyone's background in the group, or what kind of, where are people coming from that, mm-hmm. that are doing this? Are they all artists, or?
Yeah, a lot of different backgrounds. Joe, the big guy in the show, was a semi-driver, and now he drives
a
bus, and he's in the show.
Yeah.
And I'm just a freelance music instructor and a caricaturist during the summers at amusement parks, draw people's caricatures. Rachel Lala Valeria, the other head dancer, she's a yoga teacher and a makeup artist.
Okay.
A couple students. The band is a lot of pro guys who do musical theater year-round, either in touring productions or in Grand Rapids. Just a ragtag bunch of people, you know, the kind of people you would think would go on the road because none of us have day jobs or anything like that, and, you know, starving artists and all that.
How much time does this take up in your daily life to put on a show every month to write? Because it's a new show every month.
Yeah,
right.
This is, especially touring, this is gone into the realm of I should like reassess what I'm doing because I'm spending a lot of time on it and not getting paid for it. It's definitely, I'm doing 60, 70 hours a week right now on this show. It's a lot of fun, and I did have to cut out a lot of work. I got to cancel a lot of jobs and all for this in the hopes that it'll pay off or lead to something cool someday.
If you recall last show when we did our fundraiser, we sold song packages. If you donated to our show, we would write a song about you, friends. And is Tiffany Jewel Middleton here tonight? Okay, so this is the thought I had for her song, because I didn't really meet you at all except one time, but I knew she was in the roller derby and a badass. So she could handle it if I wrote a song about me killing her. So, this is a song about me and her being lovers, and she leaves me for the derby, and then something bad happens. No, you don't have to sit in the chair. And I was listening to a lot of Nick Cave.
72 once said to me, I've got to join the derby. The violence, it doesn't frighten me, I've got to join the derby. Delilah Danger calls to me, and I must be what I must be. Oh, Tiffany Jew, she left me for the derby.
This is our second national tour.
Okay. And talk a little bit about the process of funding it. You use Kickstarter.
So yeah, isn't that awesome?
Yeah, Kickstarter is great.
A friend used it for a project. I was just blown away by it. They supply the template and you just plug your stuff into it. I think if anyone's smart, they can they can succeed. And we have the fan base. We've been around for a long time. So last tour, we did a fundraiser for $15,000, made $18,000.
Okay.
Because we didn't really know what we were doing.
Sure.
So we just kind of overshot. This time around, we bought ourselves a bus and did a fundraiser for $6,500. And just to do the basic cost of renovating the bus. I mean, we bought it, but then we had put bunks in it and electrical for using as a dressing room and all that stuff. So, and it's really for anyone who wants to do a fundraiser. I mean, the people that aren't doing it right just aren't constantly talking about it.
Yeah.
That's all it is. We have 15, 18 people in the show, and we just had everyone talk about it all the time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, for 2 months, and we hit our goal 20 days early or something, and then it was just more money on top of that.
Yeah,
and it's that same mentality that everyone has. You know, 90% of be it the artist community or business community just thinks if they build it, people will come.
Yep.
And no, you just have to know how to use your tools, you know, and you really have to have a concrete vision before you go into something. And like, and I think a lot of the uninitiated think that we have a concrete vision of the show. You know what I mean? Like, we wrote all the material and we rehearsed all the dances and then we worry about taking it on the road. This is day 4 of our tour. We had 3 days of rehearsals before we took off.
Okay.
The show's fine.
Yeah.
We figured that out 2 nights ago. You know, Milwaukee was rough. Madison was a little bit rougher. Last night it finally gelled, and now we're just going. The prep work was just that. The vision, that who is our target audience? Who do we want to get the message out to? How are we going to execute this thing? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, just drawing a line on the map of where we want to go. What's the intricacies of living on a bus or repairing a bus? I mean, all of that stuff. You have that goal. I want to write a song. And I want people to hear it. You know, who cares about the song? Think about what you're going to do before you get on stage to make sure that people do hear it.
Into this world you are born, and from it you will soon be torn, never even knowing the reason why. Who am I? What can I be? Why is all this mystery? And when you think you've got it, then it's gone. Time is always moving, always grooving in its own peculiar way. Oh, it's slipping, you can't catch it as it makes its move away. As you're reaching, gasping, clasping just to live another day. Can I have more time? The sun is setting, every heartbeat is a second thrown away. Every day is just a day that's long forgotten as you sit and grow, gathering mold in your lazy boy recliner that was on a discount sale at Hole. Pretty soon your aging time is taking its toll, and the thing you found exciting how suddenly boring. You are growing older, Jurassic, but you sit and wonder why the hair on your head is suddenly turning gray, and the hook in your back is starting to sway. You are growing older, time is taking it all away. Oh, you are old. You are growing.
the world, they back down to earth. A big frown, a smirk, a grin, grounded dirt. We do the blue collar, no king crown.
Listen, I don't like to brag, but I know kind of a lot of rappers. I know a lot of other kind of musicians too, and when I was a teenager, I was even kind of a musician myself. If you can consider playing bass guitar really awkwardly in punk rock bands a form of musicianship. So I know a thing or two about chord changes and 4-4 beats and singing about girls and stuff. But even though I now know all of these rap people, I still don't really understand how rap music gets made. So Corey Gerlach and Wes Eisenhower, also known as DJ Absolute and ADEF of Soul Crate Music, sat down with me in Corey's home studio to talk a little about Soul Crate's writing process and how they approach the songs on their latest release, the Kick Rocks Collection. The first voice you'll hear after mine belongs to Wes.
I think, you know, I talked to Corey a little bit about the process of like making the beats and how that works, but I'm kind of curious just about your process and like how things go on your end. Like it kind of starts with the beat, right?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, Corey gives me and my brother he gives us a lot of music. We sift through a lot of beats, and you know, sometimes it'll even start with, hey, I have these certain samples, or I have a skeleton of something. Do you want to come over? Or he'll email it to me and like, is this a direction you want me to go? If not, I'll stop exploring it, type of thing. So I feel like I have a reasonably like good hand in the production wise too. Like he has the know-how, and he kind of like, we sit here and I'm like, okay, can we try it like this? Can we drop this out? Or I like this sound, and you know. So, yeah, it's good, and you know, we end up probably using, I mean, maybe 1 out of 10 that really, he makes. Probably not even that many. Like, you know, a lot gets made, and very few actually get written on. You know, so I have a huge amount of Absolute beats that we probably won't ever write songs over, but they're still good. You know what I mean? It's just nothing ever struck.
Bar by bar, then, like, if you need, do you know, like, if you needed like a 16 for a song, do you think,
sometimes? Like, it varies. The process varies for me almost every time. A lot of times, sometimes I'll sit down and I'll write, you know, a complete verse and chorus and a whole song and a complete thought. Other times I'll sit down and just write 4 bars and get distracted and write more. And I do tend. Honestly, I do tend to think in bars, though, when I do write. Sometimes I won't write even, you know, lyrics. I'll just write thoughts or blah, blah, blah. But when I'm writing music, I think of it in bars. I really do.
Don't really have a choice anymore.
I know. I think that's probably hurts me, too.
You think?
Like, I don't know. Like, it's very, like, if I... I don't know. Now that I actually say it out loud, I feel like, you know, if I wasn't so conscious of bar 6, you know, and I'm like, sometimes in this is usually not a good thing either. It's like, I'm almost there. 16 bars, like I'm reaching the finish, you know, and I think that can hurt sometimes too. But, you know, I'm constantly writing stuff and funny words I like or lines I think are interesting. And then I sometimes incorporate them later, you know.
Did you come to rap as a writer, or is it something? Did you write before you started doing this, or what?
Not really. I kind of, when I was younger, I wrote songs and stuff. Yeah. Like I wrote. I wish I still had the stuff, but I wrote songs on my guitar and stuff. Not really, really bad stuff. Really, really bad. But I guess that's how it begins.
Teenage rock.
And I was always kind of writing things down, but you know, not till we really got going with making music and stuff did I, like, keep it all in one place and consciously write songs that I thought I'd actually ever say out loud. So,
how did you? I'm trying to figure out a way to phrase this so it doesn't, so I don't sound like an asshole. But like, how do you? Like, rap is inherently a kind of an aggressive form.
Yeah.
And so, where do you think, like, coming at, if you didn't come into it as a writer already, like, where do you think you came up with the confidence to say, like, this is something I could do, not, like, I guess, yeah, like,
jeez, I don't know.
Because, you know what I mean? Like, there's a built-in confidence.
Right, right. Well, I kind of took it from these guys because they were, you know, my brother and Corey, Danny and Corey were making music before I was.
Okay.
They were making it together and I saw my little brother doing it.
Mm.
And I was like, okay. Like I, at that point when I started seeing Danny writing songs and recording music, I was like, oh, I have words and songs. Yeah. I'm like, it almost was a realization like, oh, I can do that too then. Like, you know, so.
If he can do it.
Right. It was kind of like that. It was. And luckily we've always had Corey on the, you know, technical end of, you know, he always had recording equipment and that's how that relationship started. But it was almost a kind of a realization like, oh, I can do this too. And then it was almost like we just kept going with it. And we, honestly, when we started in Sioux Falls, 10 years ago, like, there was nothing to compare us, what we were doing to, really. So, I'm really glad there wasn't, because then I would have been like, wow.
Yeah.
Like, this is, like, ridiculously, like, amateur and poor and, like, you know, very, but there was, like, no one really to compare it to in Sioux Falls, just in my group of friends, so it was just like, okay, like, we just kept going, and thankfully, like, I finally am starting to feel comfortable. Yes. But 2 years from now, I'll probably look back at this time period and be like, wow, I still, like, you know, I'm always learning and getting more comfortable.
Well, and I think that's the nature of
absolutely.
Art, too.
Absolutely.
I think if I'm suspicious of anyone who's like, oh, I loved what I was doing 5 years ago.
Right, for
this
sure.
This is, a, you know, yes.
For sure.
Throwing it all, we live it reckless and dumb. Promote definitely doing dumb shit when you're young. There's no right way to do it, how am I doing it wrong? The young kids sing the stupidest song, then move along like, oh, no. You ain't making a map. You just snoring in poor health while taking a nap. Breaking a back with a pack up a mountain of proof. The little brat think he's swimming in the fountain of youth. An old man shouting at you was spouting the truth out the mouth that shoots. Yeah, we doubting it's true. A cool exit, money went out in the news. Yeah, your days are numbered, just try counting them. Outdated, hot to cold, we just made it. Young and looking forward to old and frustrated. The golden guts fade into the ground we dug. Fool the old folks hate what the young folks love. What's this? Just a bunch of us kids. First one did it, so we all jumped off the bridge. What's that? A bunch of old folks retired. Didn't like it, so they went and set the bridge.
And it's different. This is another thing I think we have going for us is we are a very much a group.
Mm.
I am not going solo anytime soon. Dan, you know what I'm saying? We in 10 years have never, it's every show, Corey, me, and Danny. Like, DJ Absolute. And it's like, a lot of people, you know, cycle through DJs or have a different hype man with them. It's like, we do not function without the three of us, which I think is really cool, you know?
So, well, yeah, because even with the solo records that you put out a few years ago, I mean, it was clearly, like, they feel like Soul Crate Records with a focus on...
Right, exactly.
One person more than, I mean, everybody's still involved.
Yeah,
so with that, we have two people on every song, like, which becomes a challenge, you know
I'm
what
sure,
I mean?
Yeah.
It's definitely a challenge, and, you know, as far as creative process-wise, a lot of times, you know, me and Dan will be in the studio at separate times, and, you know, okay, I have this idea for this song, let's try this, and, you know, sometimes I'll, you know, write a verse and a chorus and a third verse, and, you know, it's kind of like, Dan, here's your section, fill it, make it appropriate, you know, or vice versa, he'll hand it to me, and then it comes, that's one way things go, and then other times we're all sitting down here, one of us has an idea, and then we just all are sitting in here thinking, and Dan will go in there and record, and I'll listen to his verse, and I'll write while he's recording. That's happened a few times with some of our more popular songs, like Oh My and like Novocaine Rain, which are like kind of mellower, but songs that people like to hear live. Like, those were Dan's ideas, and I sat in this chair while he was recording and wrote my parts, and then went in right after him and put them together.
Wow.
So it's like, and then, you know, we both come out and we turn the monitors on and we all listen, and, you know, we're in and out a million times. Like, okay, let me change this, or let's do
one
another
word.
Let's put a little harmony on this part, or I didn't like that. So it's like a million different ways, but somehow it all comes out, you know, and it works out. But
so watch it murder the sunshine and following the moonlight home to you. The city seems so quiet as I'm roaming through. Unfamiliar faces look like ghosts. They just stare right through me as my body floats. I got nowhere to go. I need to find you. No one I know to stand beside me. Show you the ghosts that live inside me. Hope that I grow. I will survive. You infected me so easily. Eventually you're weakening me. I hope you know you got control. To bleed me slow. I guess I'm what's the up. My fingertips is
like in this record. You know, we very much, there's different sounds on here, and, like, you know, there's some lighter stuff, there's some more aggressive stuff, there's some, you know, we got a little looser on this. Just, like, we swear a lot on this record.
That's true, and that, and like, it's more often than not, it's like,
say,
no,
yeah.
Did you say shit?
Yeah.
Oh, we gotta cut that out, we gotta change, put a real word in there.
I was gonna say, you guys are, because you...
Harley and Panic had like very little.
I was
curse.
Gonna say, was there? There wasn't. It was pretty clean.
It was very clean, and that wasn't really even. It wasn't really even on purpose. Like I felt like we were writing. Like I don't know. It just didn't need it. But this stuff that we're. It's like. I feel like we kind of went back to our old. We're just like, let's just like fuck it. Like let's just record some stuff. And some of it's, you know, funny and. Some of it's a little bit lighter, and some of it's more aggressive and a little bit vulgar, and it's like, that's who we are, too, you know? Like,
I think
I like that kind of stuff. Like, so, just talking about last night, we were like, damn, we say fuck on this record a lot. Like,
yeah,
it's kind of weird,
like,
but...
That, like, I think we said the word bitch on this record more than we ever have.
There's a lot of... I don't know why. I don't know. We're just... this one, we kind of... just let loose a little bit and just like, all right, we'll just make whatever, you know.
Check it out, yeah. What's up, nerds? Cluck, cluck, got duck birds. Chirp, chirp, and quack, curse, and cuss words. Fresh out the trash, the crumpled up verse. Fuck first, at last, I'm flying upwards. To the sky and back, we climbing fast, gliding, and I'm eyeing that when I smack an undermining ass. I find that mine'll last, try to find that final pass. Celebrate the task, grab a glass, watch the wino splash. We show no signs of cracking, but I wouldn't want to be the one to tell you that. If
but there's also some very, like...
Some serious stuff.
There's also some, like, very reflective... things on this record that are like calm and mellow, so it goes from like calm to aggressive kind of in certain spots. But
trying to kill time, well, time quietly kills me. Silent is the light that fills me. I'm guilty, left the garden unwatered and wilting, uprooted out of order and filthy. Yeah, still she showed the meaning of my life. Resides in between the low points and highlights. Not reminded as often as I'd like. Comfortably catch the inevitable sideswipe. And how fast we learn. Push down, get up, loving the crash and burn. Make a splash and realize it's past your turn. Act surprised when nobody is as concerned. There's no future, it's right now. You never know it, no forward or back. We're only in the present moment.
I mean... As time goes by, I see, you know, to be honest with ourselves and everybody, like, I see, like, the touring slowing down, obviously, and, like, you know, family starting to happen and stuff, but no matter what, like, I still live 2 miles from where we record, and, you know, Corey lives, and I think that's gonna continue, no matter, like, we have no plans of slowing down and on the creativity tip, and, you know, short term, like, this EP is coming out May 23rd, and we're already talking about, you know, the full length that's going to follow it. So, and I just, I don't know. I feel like I, you know, Soul Crate has been like college for us. Like I've learned so many things about, you know, even just throwing an event or learning Photoshop to design a flyer, or, you know, networking with people, or, you know, just things like that. I feel like what we've done in the past years will apply to my whole entire life, you know, in some way. And that's all I really want to do, is keep doing interesting things, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting, like, how by doing the thing that you love, you can, you better yourself in all these unexpected ways. Like,
yeah.
I think to pursue something that you're passionate about, you need to learn how to do that.
Right.
And doing so like that.
And it's funny, like, I have this, like, in the back of my head, the whole time we've been doing this, I've been like, okay, how are you going to stop?
Yeah, exactly.
Are you ever going to quit? Like, when is your, like, I'm always, like, in my head, like, quit.
Yeah.
And I'm straight up 100%, like, addicted. I don't know how to do anything else. Like,
it's even addicted to, like, just the work. Like, just
that's
the work.
What I'm saying.
Like, you can never stop. You're
right.
Just like, I'm just idle. I'm going to go,
like,
do something.
I've said to myself, like, all right, I'm going to, like, focus on something else and, you know, work on something that could benefit, you know, me in a different way. And I'm completely addicted to, like, to making music with Corey, and it's cool. Like, I can't stop thinking about it. And I've tried to be like, dude, chill out. Like, you gotta slow down, or, like, you can't focus on it or put this much energy into it. And it's like an addiction. But it's cool.
Believe in something more. The more that we adore, adore the way you used to smile before you close the door. A door that never opened, an open frame of mind. A mind in constant battle, never let it fall behind. Behind the reasons lie, a lie that broke apart. A part of me that's lost forever, forever in my heart. A heart that's slowly beating, a beaten path escaped. Escaped the false and unconvincing, separated fate. A fate that paints a picture, pictures are just pieces frozen, frozen from the cold and lonely dark spaces you left open. An open mind slowly shutting with the clock ticking, ticking off dirt and getting hot dogs, frostbitten, bitten flesh bleeding. Drunk, dizzy, breastfeeding, feeding off your vibes won't be easy while my head's sleeping. I'm sleeping in the bottle of emotions that you threw in the sea a long time ago. Hoping it would get to me, I never let it. I let it fade, fade to black, black magic and angels playing charades. It goes, oh my God, oh Lord. You can't get any lower when you're laying on the floor. Like, oh my God, oh Lord. You never get enough.
Well, it's time for another installment of Fix Me, a segment of the show in which I ask family and close friends for advice on how I could be doing better in certain areas of my life. This time I talked to my friend Dessa, who, as was established in episode 1 of the Radio Hour, is an extremely talented and successful artist, and we've known each other for a lot of years now, and we've read a lot of one another's writing in that time. And when I'm having difficulty with a writing project, and I need a fresh set of eyes, or just some words of encouragement, Dessa is the first person I turn to every time. When it comes to writing, I respect her opinion more than anyone else, hands down. I think that for me, the hardest thing about these Fix Me conversations is avoiding rationalizations when I'm responding to the critiques. There's definitely a fine line between explanation and excuse, and while I definitely think that in this conversation, an explanation of my behavior in the specific example Dessa cites was warranted, I don't want to give the impression that I disagree with her overall point. So, and I realize that disclaimer itself might sound like a rationalization anyway, so I give up. But one of the side effects of this kind of conversation also is that sometimes things come up organically that require a little context for the listener. So, and in this conversation, Dessa mentions a thing called Pitch Fest, which is a yearly conference for new screenwriters that's held in Los Angeles in the summer. And it's kind of supposed to be a way for people outside of the film and TV industry to learn how to break in. And I went there a couple summers ago, so that's kind of what we're talking about when she brings that up. So, and I think that's all you need to know going in. So, enjoy, I guess? I don't know. This concept is maybe a little too weird.
Okay, so I'm going to start light and we'll just see where it goes.
Okay.
Are you just any preamble?
Well, let's set the table a little bit, and just you're not just some, you know, pop star
that I know.
You're not some pop star trying to tell me how to live my life. We've known each other for probably going on 10 years now.
Right.
And met in college in writing classes. And I think that's probably all we need to know.
And I think that if there's anybody who has less credibility to tell someone how to live their life, it's most pop stars. So in my defense, I'd like to say I'm also like, you know.
Okay.
I'm a not very successful pop star, if that puts me back on, on the standing to tell people what to do. Okay. I want to talk about bet. Oh man, this is uncomfortable.
Okay.
I want to talk about bet hedging.
Mm.
I feel like this is writer, but maybe more than writer.
Okay.
That you'll be struck by an idea that excites you and that you've got stake in. Well, talk about that idea. Explore that idea. And then immediately move to an ancillary idea wherein failure is not such a frightening prospect.
That,
this is horrible.
No, that I think I'm very sad to say that I think that you're probably right about that.
Did you, I mean, how no, much, okay.
Yeah. No, but how about for the listener? which is in itself strange. For the listener, how about some examples?
Okay.
Or an example.
Sure.
We don't need to get into all my failures.
I just mean even like, so I met you in college.
Yeah.
So I'm going on 30 this spring. I don't think I could drink, so I think it has been 10 years when we met.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. You were, when we got to drink, it was at places where you could drink, where they weren't carding.
Right. Okay. So
I almost named the place that we had to drink, but I didn't want to get anyone in trouble.
I like that idea of naming. So then I met you as you're writing mostly for Page. You know, you were writing like essays and fiction.
Okay.
Because podcasts weren't invented.
Yeah.
Right. And I felt like you were so excited by that. And you're obviously one of the students, as was I, to like dispense of false modesty, that was excited about writing. And I think like most of our instructors seem to say, hey, there's some spark here. There's some, mm-hmm. there's some talent, however decent. Mm-hmm. And, I think if our classes bet, they would bet on you. And then as I've continued to know you as a writer, some of the interests that you've developed are in screenwriting. You've done more humor, I think, than when I first met you. Maybe it's because of the class you're in. You know, you've been on Dave Eggers' site as a contributor, McSweeney's and stuff. But then I feel like you know, you were so into the screenwriting thing for a while, and you were attending like Pitch Fest. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, yeah.
And even when you started the screenwriting thing, I wondered, is this a departure from his essays? Because he's worried about his essays not taking off if he fully commits himself and says, I'm going to try to get an agent. I'm going to finish a fucking compilation. I'm going to have something that someone can say no to. Mm. And then you got into screenwriting and I was like, okay, well maybe this is just his new interest, yeah. You know? And then I read some scripts and the whole shit, you know, red pen and manuscripts like back and forth, and I was excited about it. And then you're here with a microphone.
This is not going in episode one. For sure. I'm saving this for at least down the line.
And I want them all to win. And I don't think there's anything you've done that's like, okay, you've abandoned some fundamental kernel of your artistry. The only thing I'm worried about is like this kind of enthusiasm theft where nothing gets your attention long enough to either take off or at least be thoroughly explored enough to be called a failure.
Okay.
And I feel like if you're not failing with some regularity in a non-negotiable way, like that was a failure, then you are being insufficiently brave as an artist.
No, that's excellent.
This is horrible.
No, that's an excellent insight. And my impulse, what I'm trying not to do is defend myself too much or to refute things.
Okay. But I want to know. But can I find out later?
Well, let me... No, but I will kind of explain, because I think that's all completely valid.
Okay.
And maybe these are just rationalizations that I've given, because this is definitely a tendency that I see in myself. And especially when I see... we have a mutual friend who published a book
this summer. That's amazing. Well, we can name her. Jesus. Alexa Stevenson wrote a breathtakingly good book. And I see, and obviously you're succeeding very well in your chosen field. I don't know why I'm speaking these euphemisms.
Of rap music.
So I'm aware of that. And I feel like a lot of, specifically with the screenwriting, I think that was born out of, that was a situational thing. For the time that I think you really started excelling in your area as a writer, as well as a rapper, my life had taken like kind of a different turn than I thought. My priorities had shifted, and I entered it into a pretty unhealthy relationship at the time. And I saw myself, I wasn't writing quality work at all back then. I've looked back at it and I was like, maybe it wasn't as bad as I thought. And it's pretty terrible. And then once I was out of that situation, I thought I wanted to get away from it and I wanted to try something different. And I thought I love movies and I wanted to learn how to do that. I got really, really excited because it was something new and I felt like it was, cleansing my palate a little bit. And there was an urgency to it because there was a deadline because I wanted to go to this Pitch Fest thing in LA. And so I went to Pitch Fest and it was exciting to feel like I was part or at least not part of, but, on the fringes, like kind of touching this big industry. But that weekend in Burbank grossed me out.
Mm.
And it was
big industry types.
Yeah. And because it was very strange that the idea was that there were seminars during the day about, and this is, I'm not going to stay on this too long because it really just sound like I'm defending, a poor work ethic. but I was kind of grossed out and was hearing during the day about, oh, here's how you succeed in Hollywood. Here's how you succeed in Hollywood. And then the same consultants who were giving these talks during the day at night would get drunk at the cocktail hours and talk about how the industry was falling apart.
Totally.
And they're like, it's just like the music industry, actually. Like they're like,
and the only paycheck they're getting is from that fucking speaking
engagement. Exactly. Right? And part of the Pitch Fest is I met with a consultant individually, and she, we talked a little bit about my script, and she's like, well, that's interesting, and then she's like, well, this won't sell, and I said, well, why do you say that? And she's like, well, you've described it was a supernatural horror, but had a lot to do with the cycles of abuse, and she's like, no one wants to no one's gonna finance a movie about child abuse. Like, this is clearly a story about child abuse. And and then I talked about an hour-long TV like pitch that I had, which was a story that I was really excited about and that I'm actually working on now as a novel length project. And she said, and I said, well, you know, I was excited about this for a TV series, but I'm not going to pitch it because I know it'll never get made, and I want to tell that story. So I was like, so I think I'm going to do it as a novel. And she's like, oh, you mean as like a movie, as a script? And I was like, no, as a novel. And she's like, oh, you care about stories.
Oh.
And she was being nice, but I don't know that you're a screenwriter. And she said, I can tell that you're a storyteller, but she goes, I think you need to figure out what kind of stories you want to tell and how you're going to tell them. And at the time I was, I'm there. And so I thought, well, no, I'm a screenwriter now, because in my mind I was like, I'm not an essayist because I've been writing shit essays and I'm not a fiction writer because I've been writing shit fiction for the past 3 years. And then, and so I was like, well, so I must be a screenwriter. And then I started trying to work on another script and using the things that I had learned, like, well, this is what will sell.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, no, I'm not. I realized the industry was falling apart because that's what everyone said.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, that isn't the easy payday that I thought it was. Like, that's, I'm not going to get a big chunk of change off of it. And I'm also not, and there's no big payday for books really anymore.
So that was, at that point, I was like, well, you need to figure out what you're going to do that mm-hmm. you love and, mm-hmm. and figure out, and so do whatever. So since then, what I've been trying to do is like, what do I want to do and only do the things that I want to do creatively because, and not worry about editors or not worry, you know, about, getting into lit journals that are going to get the same number of readers that come to my website.
Totally.
And so, so that's kind of freeing, but it's also, but I think it's also what you're saying still applies to that, where mm-hmm. it's also when you have that, when you give yourself complete creative freedom, you're also giving yourself, you're not accountable.
Mm.
And so it's easy to skip away from things if you get bored or if
totally.
You get tired.
And I mean, in part, like, I think there's, as far as like finding medium, I think mm-hmm. a lot of artists, there's two other friends I know who've done the writing, screen, and then a third medium, trying to figure out where they land.
Yeah.
And in part, they're the people who I know who have the most like, who have the most raw talent. They know what good sentences are. They know what good turns of phrase are, good metaphors, and also stake, which is maybe like a kind of coy, you know, writerly term to use. But essentially, it's the answer to the question, why should I give a fuck about this?
Mm.
Stake, at least that's how I understand yeah. that word. I'm saying that only because I don't know if, you know, I don't know yeah. how popular that term is. But I think that one thing that I'd hope, as I watch you do you're a good humorist. And I hope that in deciding like artistically where you land, you know, that if there's looking to be done, that you don't shy from it and keep moving.
Okay.
But that it's not because of the risk of an absolute failure. You bailed before, you know, it's countdowns and we get to two all the time and yeah. then bailing, you know, if that's why you're moving or not. But the other thing I'd say is that the same bet hedging concern with the stake of your projects, that you're such a good humorist, that I hope that if you choose very light humor, it's because you love it and not because, you're apprehensive about more serious stake.
Did I ever tell you about, my friend Emily told me the reason that I stopped writing things for McSweeney's a few years ago. And I'm not saying she made me quit writing for McSweeney's, but the last piece I wrote for them was a thing called What Kind of Ghost Do You Have? And I was really proud of it. I still think it's a funny piece. And she just kind of shrugged when she read it. And she said, and I was like, well, what, you don't like it? And she's like, it's funny, but just funny isn't good enough for you. And that's stuck with me for years.
That's a huge fucking sentence to hear, yeah.
So... yeah, so I always keep that in mind. And sometimes I write, and that's always in the back of my head. Sometimes I write things just to be just yeah. funny, because I think that is okay sometimes. But that's, but yeah, that has stayed with me, obviously, for
totally
about 7 or 8 years ago.
And so. I think, like, you know, if you were to look at the collection, where that means, like, bound between the covers of a book,
mm-hmm.
or just, like, a person's collected works, you know, mm-hmm. where we understand to have them in a lot of shit, their hands in a lot of stuff, that I think just funny... is one of the few things you can just be where mm-hmm. readers will keep reading.
Yep.
You can't be just sad.
Yep.
You can't be just happy or yep. just proselytizing, you know, or even just deep gets old.
Mm-hmm.
But like just funny is one of the few carrots on the only stick that will hold it that yeah. keeps people moving, at least by my artistic read so far. I think you've got a lot of just funny essays in you. It would just, I would just worry that if all the essays or all the podcasts or all the movies were just funny, that there's a lot of what I understand your skill set to be that wouldn't be represented. And it'd be fun to see you take some risks all the way to the mat and ride or die by it. So
let's, in closing, give me some suggestions or give me a suggestion. Like, what do you think? Hmm. What do you think I do? Like, how would you suggest that I correct this, or what's okay. one way I can work on this?
Part of it, part of me, I have my own favorites in mm-hmm. what you do, and so I don't want to superimpose those on your artistic life,
yeah, yeah.
you know? But I think that if you do have something that you're passionate about, as long as your living expenses aren't outrageous, it seems like you could meet part of them with the talent that you have at your disposal. So I'd pick something, whether that's the podcast or a collection of essays or essays delivered via podcast, and then go all the way? Like, what would it look like if this were successful? So does that mean that I'd have people, I mean, I'd have 100,000 hits, you know, a year? And, or does that mean that I'd develop enough profile here that I could land myself a paying columnist job somewhere? Does that mean that I'd have subscribers where that are paying some modest sum every month? But like, maybe it's ugly, but to me there's two ways that are successful. And one is, you know, they make you some money. Okay, well, that's an easy way to count success. But the other thing is to say that people care about it, you know. Mm-hmm. People read it, it connects with people. I'm not someone who thinks if you write a play and no one has ever seen it that it's doing as much art legwork as art ought to do, because it's not out in the world. So to set some metrics by which you understand yourself to be successful, and then to follow that idea all the way until you got there, or you know that you can't get there. What would success look like? And don't bail before you know that you can't have it or it's yours.
I want to win. I just want to win. I want to crush you till your windpipe caves in. And I want to be the prettiest person at Earth Cafe. And I hate Tina Fey. I know that's taboo. So if you don't like it, you can fuck you. 'Cause I want her money, her glory, her baby, her job, and her dog. And if one more person tells me that I have to watch Modern Family, I am going to buy that gun I've had my eye on.
This has been the Horses and Ghost Radio Hour. I've been your host, Brian Bieber. Big thanks to Corey Ruffin of Super Happy Fun Time Burlesque for taking the time to chat with me before his show, when he just as easily could have been hanging out backstage with a bunch of scantily clad women instead. You can get more information about Super Happy Fun Time at superhappyfuntimeburlesque.com. Thanks also to Soul Crate Music. Their new EP, The Kick Rocks Collection, will be released on May 23rd, and they'll be heading out on tour shortly after that. You can download the first single from the Kick Rocks collection for free and check out upcoming tour dates at soulcratemusic.com. And if you're interested in more of the production end of Soul Crate's writing process, look for a bonus episode in the not-too-distant future in which DJ Absolute gets really, really nerdy about how he makes beats. Thanks again to my friend Dessa. If you're near the West Coast, you can still catch her headlining the End of the Spin tour for the first 2 weeks of May. Go to doomtree.net to get the dates. The Radio Hour logo was created by Christy Corver. The Radio Hour theme is made up of Tiny Lights by We All Have Hooks for Hands. You can still download their newest record for free at afternoonrecords.com. Interstitial music was once again provided by DJ Absolute. You also heard music from Super Happy Fun Time's End of Times Orchestra and from Soul Crate Music. The song I Want to Win was originally recorded by the hilarious and talented Karen Kilgariff for MaximumFun.org. If you want to see an extremely awesome example of someone making the thing that he makes, check out what Jesse Thorne is doing at MaximumFun.org. And if you haven't already, subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can also listen to and download episodes at ghostsandhorses.com. And you can email me directly at ghostsandhorses@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
I once loved a boy, he did not love me. In retrospect, I would have to agree. But you can still bet the next one I met, I put through the ringer. Yeah, well, that is the world, and that's how it works. Every heart's broken, so everyone's jerks. And money don't change it, drugs can't erase it, you can't blog it away. And if one more person asks me what I have been working on lately, I don't think I'll ever stop crying.
Did I say horses and ghosts? I meant Ghosts and Horses Radio Hour with Brian Bieber.